This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
If these 10 things play out that kind of pull on our vulnerabilities or help accentuate our strengths, that's where we spend our time. And that's where we kind of put our focus and put our resources and put our capital and put our people's attention.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. This is your host, Trevor Drin. Today, I asked two longtime colleagues, Amit Sharma and Jim Jacobson, each of whom leads so much of our work with members, to join and share some stories from their work with leading health systems across the country and their expectations as health systems start to poke their heads back out of the foxhole and really make some decisions about what they're going to do next. In many cases, some really tough decisions. I feel like I need to put a quick disclaimer in here. We're going to be talking about strategic priorities and growth opportunities. We know that every health system's top priority right now is still being prepared to treat COVID patients and keeping their providers and staff safe. We're probably not going to talk about that, even though it is the top overall priority. We're going to focus on strategic priorities and growth opportunities down the road. So, first question. I know you guys are big sports fans. Let's just pretend for a minute that we have a sports podcast here. Jim has a long history of pretty much recruiting only Philadelphia sports fans to work at SG2. And Amit, in the last year, has rarely let any of us forget that he correctly picked his hometown Toronto Raptors to win the NBA championship. So sports are back. It's only been a couple weeks. What are your big takeaways? Mine is that I still don't prioritize watching that much sports, but I don't care. Just having that little recap or highlights or analysis to read for 5 minutes the next day is all I need. How about you guys?
Yeah, Trevor, it's definitely been an escape for me, but I think more so for my kids who have gravitated towards sports. He got on the Raptor bandwagon. He's become a basketball fan, I think, for life. And so seeing him enjoy watching, talking, and thinking about basketball and other sports now that it's back, it's really picked up and it's lifted his spirits. I agree with you. I don't have the time I used to, and I probably would change where I spend my time and prioritize my time.
Well, as a Philadelphia sports fan, you know that I have nothing but the most negative outlook possible. So first of all, any shortened season means that we're likely to lose fewer games. And I'm not wholly convinced that we're going to make it through these seasons as it is. For now, I'm going to try not to get too engaged, and because ultimately my team seemed to disappoint me year after year.
Well, that couldn't have been a better glimpse into your personality. So thanks for opening the kimonos a little bit. All right, another hypothetical. This one's a little more on topic. Put yourselves in the shoes of a VP of strategic planning or a CSO. Really tough jobs right now. Lots of expectations. They're trying to change processes and data inputs and time horizons really quickly. Strategy teams are really more short-term focused right now than ever. But what might be coming next? If you're in that role, what would you be trying to stay focused on that could be 6 or 9 months down the road?
Yeah, Trevor, it's funny how much could change in the next 6 to 9 months or the next 1 to 2 years. In the conversations we've been having with our clients and members around the country, there's going to be 1,000 small incremental moves that happen, whether it's one system doing something or another system doing something. But I think in the next 6 to 9 months, there's going to be a lot of seismic, bold, big moves that are going to take place that really kind of reset kind of the game board or upset the apple cart in a given market. The financial landscape has changed a lot for providers, for physicians, and for everyone in general due to COVID. And I think we're going to look back in 3 years and say, wow, I didn't expect that move or this move to take place. But the differentiation between the haves and the have-nots is, I think, going to get a bit more clear. And what we've been saying to our clients is plan for big moves to take place, whether it's you doing something big or someone else doing something big. Assuming that nothing's going to change is not the right way to think. And you have to think about big things that are going to happen because there's so much uncertainty. It's ripe for innovative, disruptive, whatever adjective you want to use, things to happen.
I look at one example. This is a market, the Chicago area market. We've seen a ton of consolidation that's occurred here, and there aren't a lot of independents left. And one of the largest independent hospitals left was Northwest Community Hospital. And it's not surprising that a few months into COVID-19, when they've been absolutely hammered financially, that we learn of news that the North Shore University Health System is looking to acquire Northwest Community. So we're going to start to see, and that's just the one hospital system being acquired by another decent-sized system in this market. But the other thing I think we're going to see a ton of is the thousand little moves. And I think our clients and the health systems around the country who are emerging, who will emerge from COVID-19 with a decent balance sheet, are going to have almost more opportunities than they know what to do with. I think a lot of this is going to turn into the systems that do the best in this time period are going to be those who actually have a really thorough approach to how they evaluate the opportunities in front of them, because the number of medical practices or medical groups that had dismissed an offer before may need to come back to them and say, hey, there's an opportunity, or there's a new building that's available, or there are going to be deals to had. And then these systems need to have the right kind of process to evaluate all this information and make sound decisions.
You know, Jim, that reminds me of an old quote from one of my favorite people, Michael Silver, who used to be at SG2. He said, there's deals out there, there's partnerships, and then there's strategy. And in this environment, if you're thinking about a deal, but you don't put that in the context of your strategy or a partnership that comes up in front of you or something that looks really interesting, if you don't kind of align that with your overall strategy, you're probably going to regret that 3 or 5 years from now. In this environment, really being clear about your strategy and what's in frame and out of frame for what we should and could do is even more important, because there's maybe 150 or 200 deals that could come across your plate. And it's more important to decide which ones you don't want to do almost than the ones you actually do.
Yeah, well, both of you guys get the benefit of talking directly with so many health systems leadership teams across the country. What have you been hearing the past few months that makes you think things really aren't going to go back to normal? These really tough decisions are done getting kicked down the road and will finally get addressed.
I'll ground this in the SG2 forecast, right? So we were about done with our forecast. We were about to push that out to our entire membership and had to pull it back and rethink about how future utilization would look based off of the effects of COVID-19. And so we've incorporated all sorts of things like consumer confidence and what that means and the short-term effect of that, what's happening around coverage, how we're seeing shifts, certainly in insurance coverage for, and what that means for utilization for people who are underinsured. The site of care shifts have happened so quickly, especially to virtual, the acceleration. It's like we jumped forward 5 years. We're reading more and more, studies are coming out, but we don't really know what the long-term effects of COVID-19 are going to be on the people who have essentially COVID-19 survivorship, people who have gotten through this, what it means to their bodies and how it's going to affect them down the road. One of the big things that I'm really keeping my eye on is delayed care. So people who today are saying, you know, I just don't want to go to the doctor. I don't want to have this thing checked out, even though I don't feel good today. And they push it off and they push it off. And suddenly something that they may have gone in immediately for, they've waited 6 months and that has advanced. And it means that the way that we're going to have to treat that patient is fundamentally different than if people were more willing to go in and get treated right away. So the delay in care is going to be a big effect for sure. As we've seen our forecast shift, it's made a big difference for some of our clients. They saw our projections around urgent care shift dramatically, largely due to the ongoing effect in virtual health.
Yeah, I think it boils down to the fact that a standalone kind of bricks and mortar urgent care strategy in an environment that has little to no organic growth really forces not just that client, but I think everyone around the country to kind of pause and say, should we be putting more capital into physical assets or finding ways to integrate this capability around urgent care, which is whether it's access through walk-in services for a primary care clinic, more primary care that has kind of an urgent care capability over time or at different times. It's really thinking about doing more things in an integrated way versus having separate boxes that do separate things for certain types of interactions. It really forced this client, and I know others around the country, to pause and say, what is urgent care really about for us as a system? And does it need to be its own standalone box to kind of enter a market? Or is there a different, lower cost, more integrated way that we can kind of get access to that business, that relationship, and that volume?
Integration is the hardest part of this whole thing, right, Ahmed? You can build some boxes and gather assets in a market, but connecting them all and making it seamless for the patient, that's the hard thing. That's the hard part of this whole SG2 system of care, right?
You know, Trevor, to your point about what have we been hearing that makes these really tough strategic decisions is the line of sight to like predicting what things are going to look like is so much fuzzier and foggier today than it's ever been. I think our clients are really challenged with what are things going to look like in 6 to 12 to 18 months? And do we get back to normal or pre-COVID volumes? Or what percentage of pre-COVID do we get to? What's the mix of kind of backlog, pent-up demand versus new business that we see coming back today? You know, how sustainable is that business? It's a very hard time in which to plan and make strategic decisions. And at least in our conversations with our clients, there's kind of two sides of that coin. You can get into this analysis paralysis loop of looking at it, hoping to predict it, hoping to be kind of perfect in how it's going to play out. Or you can kind of take an approach that looks at potential ways that the market could unfold, scenarios, both kind of qualitative and quantitative, to understand kind of what's the likely range of whether it's volume or market activity or market evolution that could take place. And then you kind of place some bets to say, this is how we want to be positioned no matter how things shake out. And if we are too inpatient heavy or too hospital centric, both the projections and our strategy or our perspective tells us that we need to be different. We need to have more assets outside the hospital. And I think COVID has made that very clear that a hospital only based view may not be the recipe for future success. A fee-for-service only based view or only based approach isn't the recipe for success. Physical assets alone, not having virtual, we know just in how quickly the uptake happened, is not a recipe for success. And so it's really thinking about, can't be perfect. And I think the decisions are tough because we always try to be perfect, but it's making the best guess at how things are going to change and then seeing how does your organization and your strategy need to evolve and to change in order to hit that. And a good example of kind of that story is some work that we've also done recently around kind of ambulatory surgery and physician alignment and really thinking about how important it is to have non-hospital places or a destination to do procedural work that's outside the hospital. And our projections tell us that that's a very important thing to have. But that also then creates a story of, can we do that where we have all of that control ourselves, or do we need to build and strengthen our relationships with the community and independent docs in the marketplace? As we look kind of 3 and 5 years out and we read the tea leaves, yes, we may not be making the same margin per case going forward. But I guess the question is, and the conversation is, do you want to have a seat at the table and look at the entire piece of the puzzle or entire pie, or just be able to access a small tranche of that pie? And while you can maintain your margins, you only see 25 or 30% of the entire business. With that larger, broader alignment and ambulatory surgery perspective, you're at least able to participate in 100% of the business. And that's a driver for future success from our perspective. And that's kind of what we've been telling, sharing, articulating with our clients, both from a quantitative perspective with our forecast, as well as strategically in kind of our advisory work in helping them think through what's best for them in their marketplace.
How are teams maybe building new processes, bringing new folks in the decision-making circle, trying to plan for this level of uncertainty? I mean, just because there's uncertainty in the market, that doesn't really mean that anyone likes to get surprised down the road. So how does the decision-making process or the steps teams are going through look a little different?
So Trevor, I think it's just a lot more fluid, a lot more kind of ongoing. I think the days in an 18 to 24 month strategic planning process that has at every 6 months or 12 months, we kind of look at it and see where we're at, or every 12 to 18 months, we look at it and see where we're at. I think it's now going to happen on a monthly, maybe every other month, maybe quarterly basis with a lot more discussion and kind of iteration about Where have we been? What factors or dynamics in our market have changed? And does that evolve the direction we're going? It's less about the piece of paper or the PowerPoint presentation that has the strategic plan, but it's more about the kind of the organizational mindset and culture around what is strategy and planning actually about. It's thinking ahead and then looking back at what you're doing and who you are, and how does that pivot, change, and evolve in order to be kind of ready, knowing that it could change again in 30 to 60 or 90 days. You kind of have to have that both near-term and long-term view, and use that information to triangulate about how you're going to be successful, or you're going to mitigate some of the risks or deal with some of the challenges.
Amit says triangulate a lot. I talk about course correction a lot. It's really hard to go in a straight line these days. You don't just set a target and say, we're going to grow in the Western part of our market and we're going to invest in cancer and orthopedics, and away we go. And there's a perfect path to be able to execute that plan. You've got to constantly course correct on the way there. It could be things like the virus. It could be new stakeholders entering. It could be some of the disruption we talked about earlier in terms of medical groups and practices and consolidation in the market occurring. But it just isn't a straight line anymore. And we know, for instance, that the finance teams have already shifted to this shorter cycle financial planning, right? They're no longer laying out a budget for a year, because at this point, everybody's so snake bitten that they don't feel like something that they project a year from now in terms of a financial plan is something that they can trust in. So they're doing monthly, or we're often hearing quarterly planning. And so we have a process where we try to help our clients gain a cone of certainty, right? To understand what's most likely to happen, what those bumpers are for those volumes and plans that they should make. And we call that environmental scenario planning. So I'll let Amit, the expert on this, talk a little bit more about it.
Environmental scenario planning is really playing out, and we've started to kind of highlight it, ways in which your market or a given market could evolve in the next 3 to 5 years, and trying to find big ticket or bold ways or provocative ways in which things were to shake out. And in the era of COVID-19, you almost need to include a scenario that thinks about the worst case. What if there was a natural disaster that wiped out a facility or an asset, or we had another variation of something like what's happened right now that kind of shuts down the entire, not just the healthcare system, but the entire economy, both in the US and around the world, that has such a seismic impact. And you play out and kind of develop those scenarios with the hope of trying to figure out the impact of each scenario on you as an organization and on your market and your industry. And I think more importantly, to see if this scenario were to play out, if there was a natural disaster, or if there was a competitive move like North Shore and Northwest, and you were their competition, what would it take for you to be kind of bolstered against that scenario playing out, in order for you to be kind of Teflon, or in order for you to be kind of ready for that eventuality? So if you were competing with a Northwest Community and North Shore, and you thought about that, you know, 3 or 5 years ago, and thought about that chess piece of Northwest Community and where that chess piece could go on the chessboard, you can kind of think ahead and say, well, if that chess piece comes to us, that's going to make us really good. This is what it means to us as a strategy and what it means to us from a differentiation point of view. But if that chess piece goes somewhere else, how do we ensure that we're ready for that move and successful in the face of that move? As you build out all these scenarios, the goal is to find the common themes or common threads that ensure your success and differentiation in the face of good things that can happen, so favorable things that could happen to you, as well as some of the unfavorable things that could happen in the marketplace, to kind of set your course and strategy going forward. And it allows you to say to yourself that we've looked at a lot of different possibilities, knowing that it's impossible to kind of chart a single course into the future, because you'll never get it right or perfect when you try to kind of take it one way or down one path. And you look at 6 or 8 or 10 different paths and then see what's most common. Is it most important for us to have kind of a distributed ambulatory network? Is it most important for us to have the right physician enterprise? Is there an issue that we have around kind of our relationship with the community, or do we need to go out and acquire our competition, what have you? There's the key tenets of your strategy come from those common themes that play out across all those scenarios.
I think it's about agility too, right? As you think about the different scenarios that could play out and the organization is then prepared, it's essentially game theory, right? If I make this move, my opponent will likely make that move and I'll be ready to counter this way. It's really important to have played out these scenarios in advance. You can move much quicker as an organization because you have a better idea of what's likely to come and you know what your response is going to be. That goes back to my point of course correction. It allows you to course correct faster than your competitors in the marketplace. And I think that's sort of the new winning formula going forward in this shorter cycle planning that we're seeing, this rapid cycle planning that we're seeing these days.
Maybe to add to that, one thing it also tells you is certain moves that happen, not that you just kind of shrug your shoulders, but there's certain moves you're not as worried about. You're worried about some of the big and the bold moves. And we know there's going to be 1,000 incremental moves. And given there's so much information every day, all day, kind of hitting us from all different angles, organizationally, you don't need to expend all that energy for every move. You say, if these 10 things play out that kind of pull on our vulnerabilities or help accentuate our strengths, that's where we spend our time. And that's where we kind of put our focus and put our resources and put our capital and put our people's attention. We got to prioritize where we spend our money. We also need to prioritize where we spend our time. And some stuff, not that it's not worth our time, but we got to spend our time where it's kind of where the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks for sharing those stories. And thanks for trying to answer the toughest question, which is what's going to happen next?
So if I could make a prediction, I can tell you the Sixers will not win the NBA championship. That's a prediction I'm not going to make with 100% certainty, but I can tell you it doesn't look good right now because they've just barely won a couple of games. So that I can take that to the bank, Jim.
I really appreciate the way this is closed out. It's a good way to wrap up this podcast, Trevor, by having Amit say terribly mean things to me, but I'm used to it at this point, so I'll manage.
That's a fun note to end on. Thanks. Well, for our listeners, please subscribe or follow if you want to hear more. I also always want to recommend other Vizient podcasts. The Modern Practice is on Vizient's Medical Leadership channel and provides a clinical perspective into current issues affecting healthcare today. Thanks, everyone. Have a great one. This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.